Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. An $83 billion plan for how to spend money by the state of Florida is due tomorrow. That's if the state legislature hopes to finish its work by the end of its regularly scheduled session scheduled on Friday. The debates, the compromises, the decisions that have to be done over the course of the next 2 days in the State House will impact hospitals, classrooms, and the environment throughout the Sunshine State. You may see the effect in your paycheck if you work for the state of Florida, or perhaps on the state portion of your property tax bill in the years to come if you're a homeowner. Lawmakers seemingly are trading spending projects in these final hours like kids trade Pokemon cards. The Senate appears willing to spend $200 million on a controversial charter school program wanted by the Florida House, while the House may be okay with a pay hike for state workers passed by the Florida Senate, but that's been taken out of the budget itself. Here's an incomplete list of unsettled issues in the final hours here. The idea to let voters decide if they want to raise the property tax homestead exemption. How to cut hundreds of millions of dollars from the money the state spends on health care. Funding a down payment to build a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee. Money to market Florida to tourists. Cash for incentives to companies to move here and bring jobs. Teacher bonuses. Even down to local projects like money to plan for a new library in Broward County, or spending on equipment at a public arts high school in Miami-Dade. All of this kind of back and forth is how Florida winds up with a state budget. We'll talk about the spending priorities in a moment, but first, the process to get to a plan in these final hours. From our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU, Gary Fineout covers the state capitol for the Associated Press. Gary, welcome back to WLRN. Do you expect a budget compromise to land by the deadline tomorrow?
Yes, absolutely, I do. I think that a lot of things have been hashed out behind closed doors. I guess there's always the chance that some vote, some proposal gets tied up, and that basically complicates things. But at this point in time, I would expect a budget to be on the lawmakers' desk tomorrow, clearing the way for a vote on Friday.
And I'll ask you about the transparency and openness in a second, because that has been a theme from the House leadership from even before session started. We'll talk about how far along that has come. What are the remaining big issues here today on Monday that really need to be settled in order for that budget to be printed tomorrow?
Well,
there's a long list, isn't there?
There's a long list, only because it's really hard to go through all the ins and outs of the process for your listeners. But suffice to say, there's sort of a public display of offers being traded, and then people go behind closed doors, and you know they come up with new offers, and we don't really get to see where the progress has been until they come back out again and say, well, here's our offers. The issue is as of yesterday, the budget chairman wrapped up their public meetings dealing with offers on the spending portion of the budget. And supposedly it is now kicked up to Speaker Corcoran and President Negron, who I guess, because we don't really have a firm answer on this, are going to come out and say, okay, here's where we are on, for instance, health care. Health care has not been fully resolved. The entire environmental section of the budget, including money for Everglades restoration and springs restoration and beaches and things of that nature, that all got kicked up, has not been resolved, and we don't know yet where that's all going to land.
Yeah, education, also one of those where the public statements have been K through 12 education funding, higher education funding, the basic constructs, the parameters have been settled upon, but there's still hundreds of millions of dollars of details that have yet to be worked out.
Absolutely correct, because what they did this year is, in a departure from the norm, is they tied a bunch of very significant policy bills to the budget. So what that means is that they, quote, put them in conference, which meant that these bills are available for amendment and change in the conference process. Well, here's the problem. Since they went into conference, we haven't seen any details.
Yeah, right.
We haven't seen any language. And so we kind of have to assume that they'll resemble what they were when they came off the floor of the House and Senate initially, but we still don't know.
You mentioned two names, House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who's the Republican leader of the Florida House, and Joe Negron, Republican senator from the Treasure Coast, who is the president of the Florida Senate. The budgetary decisions that still have yet to be made, are they in the hands of those two gentlemen right now?
Well, they were kind of always in their hands. But
but there's the bump up process, which happened over the weekend. Right. These issues that weren't settled by the chairman of the appropriations committees in the House and Senate or the chairman of the various policy committees get bumped up to the leadership level.
Correct. Yes. And everything supposedly has been bumped up, with the exception of I think it's still up in the air about these other policy bills, because under the way that it works under the we have this 72-hour cooling off period, and that's why the budget theoretically has to be done by tomorrow, because the entire printed budget, the entire bill with all the line items, has to be available 72 hours before a final vote. That 72-hour requirement, however, doesn't apply to these other major policy bills that are sort of accompanying the budget. Mm-hmm. So there's still a chance, I guess, that we could have a meeting with the two budget chairmen to discuss the policy bills. But as way we understand it, technically everything is up to Negron and Corcoran, and not that it matters in the grand scheme of things, but what's interesting is, of course, if Negron and Corcoran have a meeting publicly, face-to-face, it's supposed to be noticed under the rules.
Meaning however, that there should be an advisory sent that this meeting will be happening.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, you're supposed to tell people ahead of time, hey, the top two people in the legislature are going to meet and they are going to discuss important issues. However, there's a caveat, of course. Mm-hmm. Nothing stops them from talking by phone. Nothing stops them from having their staff. Basically, without going into too much detail, the Florida legislature is not bound by many of the traditional aspects of the Sunshine Law that people may be familiar with their local governments.
Which really dictate how two officials from the same elected body can interact with one another and the kind of public notice that needs to happen if they're interacting and discussing policy in public. We're talking about the budgetary process in the state of Florida as it's coming down to the final hours before the budget document is due in Tallahassee on Tuesday. Gary Fineout is a State House reporter for the Associated Press with us from the state capitol and our sister station WFSU. This is the Sunshine Economy. Gary, you've talked about some of these closed-door conversations that have happened. If we put the session back in reverse and go in the Wayback Machine to November, when Richard Corcoran was the designate speaker of the Florida House, he made a promise about how he wanted to rule the House under some new rules governing how individual members, at least, would request special spending projects.
It's easy to understand the motive. What we're trying to do is to say that have the most transparent and open process in the nation, and I think we've achieved that.
The most open and transparent process, talking specifically about how special member budgetary projects get put into the spending plan in the state of Florida. But overall, how transparent has this budget process been when compared to years past, Gary?
Oh, it has definitely been more behind closed doors than before. And when you have these conversations with the speaker and he kind of gives these caveats, and so in his mind, well, I shouldn't say in his mind, I don't know what's in his mind, but let me be more precise. His argument has been that the last minute appropriations, items that are usually added to the budget, right, without a lot of oversight, without a lot of vetting, that the process that he put in place at the beginning of session would prevent that, so that, in other words, there wouldn't be some $1 million appropriation sort of just come out of nowhere in the final moments and be added to the budget.
This was the fight against so-called budget turkeys, the $1 million right, for a specific statue in some House member's district or a special public pool resurfacing project that would come up, for instance.
Correct. But what happened is, normally at the beginning of the budget process, the presiding officers do negotiate behind closed doors for something what is known as allocations. And that's just a fancy word for how much money do we spend in key areas? How much money do we spend in education? How much money do we spend in healthcare? How much money do we spend on the governor's priorities? It's very it's usually very top line oriented. It's not into all the specifics. Well, what happened this year is not only did they get into some of the specifics, but then they started tying policy to it. So there was, for lack of a better word, we want to use a DC parlance here, a grand bargain. There was an attempt to have a grand bargain on a whole line of issues. You want President Negron, you want your Lake Okeechobee Reservoir deal? Okay, that's part of the deal. That's a separate bill, but it does require funding. Let's tie it to the budget. Mm-hmm. You know, Speaker Corcoran, you want $200 million for charter schools. There's a separate bill attached to that. That gets put into conference. Then we got put into stuff where Senate, you want to give state workers a pay raise. Well, we have changes to retirement benefits and to health insurance benefits that we want to see voted on by the Senate. So we're now going to put those together. So all of that was sort of hashed out behind closed doors. That was a big departure from how we've done things in the past. And furthermore, so far, as I was telling you earlier, that the language in some of these policy bills has yet to emerge. Now, while we've been told, oh, they should be very similar to what you already saw, I want to draw a distinction. Maybe some of your listeners don't remember, but if you recall in the late, close to a decade ago, we had a scandal involving a former House Speaker and a question about what were things doing being placed in the budget. There was, in the immediate aftermath of that, there was an attempt to make the process more open, where they went so far as to read in a meeting all the language, what they call proviso language, that was going to be in the budget, and to read all the language that was in these conforming bills. And here we are, we're 4 days out, we don't know what's going to be in these bills, and a lot of this stuff still hasn't been disseminated public. Clearly, very much different from just a few years ago from how we were handling it.
And so what accounts for that change, Gary? We've had a change in leadership, certainly at the House and at the Senate. We've had this pledge of transparency. We had the House muster through these new rules when it comes to these so-called budget turkeys. The Senate went along with that same kind of reform as it was billed back in November about how the budget process would work. How did we get to the promise of more transparency, but perhaps not when it comes to the big ticket items, the billions of dollars spent on healthcare and education and elsewhere?
Well, I would say clearly what I think the situation is that Richard Corcoran, who is, you know, was a chief of staff under Marco Rubio when he was Speaker, has been a political operative, he is a longtime veteran of this process, and I think he clearly understood the need for leverage and the need for how you get things done, and so I think it was a matter of kind of sidestepping some of the conventions of how we've been doing it the last few years in order to reach a final deal.
So we are speaking with Gary Fineout from the Associated Press about the state budget process here in the final hours for the state of Florida, process, priorities, and politics on the Sunshine Economy. Where does gambling fit into this budget process over the next 2 days? This is several billions of dollars to revenue for the state. Is it being negotiated as part of that grand bargain, Gary, or is it entirely separate?
I think that you might have a division of opinion about this, but here's what I will tell you. When they reached this deal on allocations that I mentioned before, they didn't leave as much money on the sort of in reserves and available for other bills than they probably would have wanted to. And what I mean by that is the Florida legislature normally tries to leave about $1 billion outside the budget, and they put it in reserves in case there's an emergency.
Right.
They also have $300 million, and this has kind of gotten lost because this is a Northwest Florida issue and it's not a lot of the rest of the state. There is another major bill that's out there that they have not yet dealt with, and they supposedly will deal with today, that would give $300 million to 8 Northwest Florida counties. And it's the BP spill money. Mm-hmm. So we need to back out that $300 million, and then there's pressure to put $1 billion, and then the question is how much they're going to set aside for tax cuts, which, by the way, the tax cut package that the House adopted earlier, $300 million, and the governor wanted $600 million, that looks like, unless there is some big infusion of cash here at the last minute, that's gone. That's not going to happen because they don't have the money. So that's why I think there will be some pressure to try to get a gambling deal done in the next few days, because if they get that extra revenue, that will help them here at the very end.
I want to ask you about taxes, because the governor had proposed, for instance, and the House had proposed cutting the commercial sales tax on commercial real estate leases, for instance, dropping that down by a couple of percentage points. There's also the effort to roll back tax rates to keep the state education portion of property taxes flat. The Senate initially did not describe this as a tax cut or a tax increase if they failed to do it. Are these still on the agenda over the next several hours?
Well, right now, as part of that initial budget deal, it does call for holding the line on what's called the required local effort, which is the amount of taxes that the local school districts have to charge in order to be eligible for state funding. They have crafted a budget that does not use that local property tax money rise. So in that instance, there should be no, for school districts, they're going to have to rely on state money and what they got in taxes this past year in order to pay for things. So from on that sense, Richard Corcoran won the battle of, I don't want to use a rise in local property values. As for the commercial lease tax, well, unless something major happens in the next couple of days, that does not look like that's going to go through. The Senate is amending this morning in committee the House tax cut package, and they're taking that commercial lease tax out.
As it'll perhaps remain at 6% as has been the case for the past many years then.
Yes.
Gary Fineout covering the State House for the Associated Press. He's going to stay with us here. We're going to take a quick break, but still to come as we talk about the state budget process, priorities, and politics. It's the spending priorities between Republicans and the state budget. That's next when the Sunshine Economy continues. Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson. 2 weeks ago, a few billion dollars separated the budget plans of the Florida House and the Florida Senate. Since then, leaders of the two chambers have found some middle ground on the total amount of proposed spending, about $83 billion. Now, that is in the neighborhood of what Governor Rick Scott proposed spending on state operations in the next fiscal year. But how the governor wants to spend some of that money is very, very different than how his Republican colleagues in the legislature want to spend the money. It's a matter of priorities, and the final decisions could have an impact on the state's economy from tourism to taxes. Gary Fineout, covering the State House for the Associated Press, is with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU, and Steve Bosquet, covering the State House for our partner, the Miami Herald, and the Tampa Bay Times, is with us from just outside the Senate chambers in the State House. Steve, let's begin here. Describe the differences between the House and the Senate and Governor Scott here in the final hours of the budget process.
Yes. House Speaker Richard Corcoran has some priorities in K-12 education that he's had to sort of drag the Senate along on. Corcoran's a big proponent of putting more money into charter schools, $200 million. He wants to put another $200 million into a best and brightest teacher bonus program that also includes principals. There are two things right there. I'll give you a Senate priority that's not a gigantic ticket item, but it's really important to a lot of people in and around Tallahassee, and that is the Senate, for the first time in like almost a decade, Senate is intent on giving an across-the-board pay raise to all state employees, which is not something the House or the governor initially supported.
So here we are, Gary Fineout, in the final hours of this budget process, and there's still a misalignment of priorities among folks in the same political party. How did it get to this point where there's still hundreds of millions of dollars of disagreement?
Well, I think that Governor Scott is basically getting shut out. I mean, he is basically not getting hardly anything he wanted, and that sort of reflects the dynamic that's been there for a few years now. And it's just Governor Scott cannot get a high level of cooperation from people in the legislature, particularly in the House.
Gary, how much of this is explained by philosophy, and how much is it by just pure politics within the Republican Party in Florida?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think there's clearly among some Republicans, especially in the House, there's a philosophical opposition in a number of fronts and the way that they see things. But I think it's also, we keep forgetting that Rick Scott was not part of the GOP establishment when he ran in 2010. And even here we are several years later, he's at odds with his own. The Republican Party of Florida doesn't even communicate with him, coordinate with him. They're kind of out on their own. I mean, we've had a schism with the Republican Party the last several years, but it hasn't led to anybody losing anything.
Let me ask you that the governor has been really singularly focused on a four-letter word since originally elected, jobs, J-O-B-S, the four-letter word that he is constantly repeating in almost every political refrain and public refrain that he has regarding the budget or, for that matter, any other policy, frankly, when it comes to the state of Florida. He has been focused on economic development and tourism marketing money when it comes to this state budget process. Here's what the governor said last week.
I'm going to keep fighting for jobs. I feel like this legislature is turning their backs on their constituents. I can tell you, I travel the state. People care about jobs. So if this legislature turns their back on their constituents, then we're going to see less jobs.
So Steve Bosquet with the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times in Tallahassee, what's the governor's strategy here in the final days of this budget process if he isn't getting what he wants when it comes to job creation?
He's got his top assistants. I'm in a Senate Appropriations Committee meeting where Ken Lawson, who runs Visit Florida, the state's tourism advertising program, is going to express concerns about a sweeping changes to Visit Florida. The governor is in Fort Lauderdale today. The governor has, I agree with what my colleague Gary Finout says, and I want to I'll expand on it to say that the governor doesn't really engage at a level that we've seen other governors do. It's nothing like it was when Jeb Bush was here. Jeb Bush was involved in every issue up to his elbows, everything. And we just don't see that level of engagement by this governor. The other thing is that Rick Scott has some strong allies in the process. It depends on the issue. But, for example, Senator Jack Latvala from Clearwater is a strong ally of the governor's on the Enterprise Florida stuff and the Visit Florida issues. So, you know, he's got people looking out for his interests here.
Let me ask you about those interests. The governor last week came out of his office in Tallahassee. Gary Finout from the Associated Press, Steve Bosquet from the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times. I know you were part of the reporter scrum that he came out and spoke to for 10 minutes. And he spoke at length for Governor Scott, 5 minutes or so, about his three priorities that he articulated. Visit Florida, the tourism marketing arm for state tourism. EFI, the corporate name of Enterprise Florida for job incentives to get companies to move to Florida and grow jobs. And then $200 million to help fix the Hoover Dyke and the southern edge of Lake Okeechobee. Those were the three priorities he articulated last week. Gary Finout, in an $83 billion budget, these three combined make up less than 10% of the budget. So is the governor just playing small ball here?
Well, I think it depends on what your goal is. If your goal is jobs and you honestly believe that a cut from $76 million in Visit Florida to $25 million is going to have a dramatic impact on the budget. I mean, let's look at if he's running for U.S. Senate in 2018, would he want to be dealing with a situation where unemployment actually had gone up over the last year under his watch? So I understand what the point is. Can that much money actually, a small amount of money, make a big difference? But, you know, if you truly believe that this is going to devastate the economy, which is what he has said,
right,
that this is devastating and these are going to be all these dramatic cutbacks, well, then that leaves the question. Then maybe it is that important. I mean, I'm not an economist, so I can't sit here and articulate to you a $50 million cut in Visit Florida is going to translate to X number of jobs being lost.
He makes the comment that every 76 visitors to the state of Florida equals one job in the state of Florida in the hospitality and tourism industry. He has utilized other state resources to make this argument. The director of the Florida Division of Bond Finance came out with a letter to the leadership in Tallahassee saying, quote, if funding for Visit Florida is reduced as much as the Florida House proposed, the credit rating on cities and counties could be negatively impacted. Steve Bosquet, the governor has tried to make this economic argument. Why has it not found an audience amongst his fellow Republicans, especially in the Florida House, for support for his spending projects, which account for really just a fraction of the overall state budget?
Yeah, I mean, this issue goes back to even before the session began. And this is where, to put your finger on the heart of the matter, one man, Richard Corcoran, the Speaker of the House, has driven this issue more than anyone else here. He's a proponent of abolishing. He wanted to eliminate Enterprise Florida entirely. And it's Corcoran who's been pushing the $25 million budget for Visit Florida, which is way less than it has now and that the governor wants. Corcoran believes these programs are wasteful. They're inefficient. That it's as he calls it, government picking winners and losers.
Right.
He just doesn't buy the argument that the governor has made so consistently, that, as Gary said, that this would hurt tourism, more than anything else, I think, as well. You hear this in the business community all the time. What the business community wants from a big state like Florida is consistency and reliability in our economic policy. And there's an inconsistency here because we've been promoting and using Enterprise Florida for a very long time in the state, and now that is changing.
It's certainly on the bubble here in the final hours of the budget process and priorities in politics, talking about it here on the Sunshine Economy. Steve Bosquet with the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, just outside the Senate chambers in Tallahassee. Stick with us. Gary Finout covering the State House for the Associated Press with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. Still to come as the Sunshine Economy continues, what if the budget gap between Republicans and the Republican governor is just too wide to close in the next day? What happens next? That's next on the Sunshine Economy. This is the Sunshine Economy, the state budget, process, priorities, and politics. Thanks for listening to WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. To hear Richard Corcoran, the Republican Speaker of the Florida House, to say it, there will be no, quote, crashes over the state budget this year. Last week at the Capitol, the Speaker refused to acknowledge there would be any snags to lawmakers wrapping up their business on time. The regularly scheduled session is due to end on Friday.
I know all of you wrote that it was going to be a train wreck. We're going to go into 18 special sessions. We're never going to get done. But now that we have come together, we've worked out our differences, and now we're having a conference, I think it's going to be a spectacular session. There'll be no crashes despite your reporting, and I think it's going to be a good day for the state of Florida. I'm good. Thank you.
Walked away from the reporter scrums there, and while there is an agreement between the House and Senate on the broad strokes of the budget, there remain several billion dollars of loose ends to tie up in the final hours, and no clear indication from Governor Rick Scott whether he'll sign a spending plan that may not include the money he wants for tourism, marketing, and job incentives.
The governor has lots of opportunities. I'm going to look at all my opportunities. I'll go through the budget. I'm going to do whatever's the best for the citizens of this state. But I can tell you what, I ran on jobs.
Governor,
I'm clear what I'm going to do. I'm going to do everything I can to fight for more jobs in this state. I grew up in a family that struggled for work. I watched my dad's car get repossessed. Thank God the second time, my older brother and I were able to give him some money so he didn't lose his car. That will happen again in this state if we don't think about marketing our state and we don't think about continuing to fund Enterprise Florida so we can diversify this economy.
Governor Rick Scott just last week talking outside his office as the state budget process needs to wind down by tomorrow in order to get the printed budget in the hands of lawmakers to vote on by the close of regularly scheduled business on Friday. This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Gary Finout from the Associated Press still with us. Steve Bosquet from the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times also still with us. Steve, you're outside the Senate chambers here. Is the legislature prepared for a potential governor veto on the budget?
I think so. I don't think it's going to happen. That would be an extreme step that would antagonize just about everybody in both parties. I see a more plausible result here that if the governor doesn't get what he thinks is a responsible budget for Visit Florida and Enterprise Florida, he's going to swing his veto pen like we've never seen before, and a lot of member projects and local initiatives are going to go down the drain. It takes a two-thirds vote of both chambers of the legislature, two-thirds vote, to override a veto of a budget. That means 27 of the 40 senators would have to vote for this. That's a very high number. That would require all 15 Democrats and 12 Republicans yep. to override a governor of their own party. I just don't see it happen.
And Gary Finout, House Democrats have said anything around a governor's veto is going to wind up coming back through them in the budgetary process, and that maybe they didn't feel they had a strong voice in the first get around. If Governor Scott does wield that veto pen and the House Republicans, for instance, still want to push things through, they're going to have to go through the Democrats now.
Well, yes, I think that's true. There is something to be said here. I did have someone with the Democrats tell me point blank. The issue here, however, is that who are the Democrats at the end of the day more divided with? Are they more divided with Richard Corcoran, or are they more divided with Rick Scott? Hmm. And especially if you got Rick Scott, who is toying with running against Democrat Bill Nelson in 2018, that adds to the calculus. In other words, what has Rick Scott really done for the Democrats? Now, it's possible they could have some meeting of the minds and he could agree to take care of some of their priorities or veto bills that they don't like. And maybe that's a way. But I think back to Steve's point, at this point in time, I'm not sure that he's actually going to go all the way and veto the budget.
So let's talk about those past practices. A year ago, Steve Bosquet, the governor, saw the budget and he got out that veto pen and went through it line by line. He didn't wholesale reject the spending plan that the legislature put in front of him. He went line by line. There were some arguments that was political retribution for certain member projects that didn't support the spending that he wanted to do on economic development. You anticipate that to be the route this year or a wholesale rejection of the budget plan?
No, I think it's the former. I think the wholesale rejection of the budget plan, I just think first of all, the House would have the votes. The House would humiliate it. The House would, there's no doubt in my mind, the House of Representatives, Corcoran can muster the 80 votes he needs to override a veto. As I indicated a minute ago, I don't think the votes are there in the Senate to do that. But that's just the way I see things. I mean, this is a dynamic place when things can change from day to day. The thing is, Rick Scott's going to look at the amount of pork barrel spending in this budget for water projects, for festivals, and for, all kinds of stuff, roads, bridges, and in many cases, worthwhile programs to help the developmentally disabled. It's still locally targeted parochial spending. That if you add that figure up, Gary will agree with me, that figure is massively higher than the combined total of what he asked for Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida, which is about a little over $100 million.
So
the governor is going to be outraged when he sees all these line item projects.
Steve, I want to say last year it was the tune of $400 million of member projects that he took out of the budget, somewhere on that number. Am I correct?
That's I can't recall. That sounds a little high, but you're not far off.
So what happens next, though, if he goes through that process? Is it as if those dollars then get reverted back to his projects that he wants on economic development, or the dollars just simply aren't in the budget?
No, that money goes into reserve. That money, that's unallocated general revenue, basically. That's unspent money.
So Gary, then the unspent money, and it's not spent on his priorities. It doesn't get put back into the budget for what the governor wants to do, does it?
No, when he vetoes money, it goes back to the source of where it came from. And so if it's general revenue, which is the main tax dollar source, comes primarily from sales taxes and other things, it just sits in the bank, and it can't be touched until it's reappropriated by the legislature.
Steve Bosquet is outside the Senate chamber. Steve, I'm going to let you go because I know that you are listening closely to the senators as they're talking about appropriations.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for joining us here, taking a step out there. He's with the Miami Herald Tampa Bay Times in the final days, the final week here of the legislative session. Gary Fineout with the Associated Press still with us from our sister station, WFSU. On this kind of what if here, Gary, I don't want to let this go just quite yet because the governor has tried to reserve all of the mechanisms that he has, including a full veto, line item veto, and perhaps some late minute negotiating tactic that we just don't know about in order to get the projects that he wants to get in there. Does he also have a process that if he is unable to get an allocation for the projects that he wants, namely Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida, as well as the money for shoring up the Hoover Dike on Lake Okeechobee, is there a process during the fiscal year that those projects can somehow find dollars outside the traditional appropriations project, whereas his priorities continue to be met?
Well, I guess theoretically there's a process that Visit Florida and Enterprise Florida could seek to get private funding. There's just no way that they can get state funding because the sort of the construct of the Constitution and the way that all works and everything like that. Once the legislature declines to fund something, you can't find another way to get state money. Now, because Visit Florida and Enterprise Florida are these quasi-public-private entities, well, I guess we could suggest something fairly radical here. Governor Scott could write a $25 million check to visit Florida.
Right, right.
He could,
or he could find other, he could find others in the industry that have said it, which, right. which would answer some of the critics in the Florida House to do the public funding for this, which is they've criticized the private portion of Visit Florida and Enterprise Florida for not coming up with the hard dollar contributions that the state has come up over the past several years.
Right, and there is one last. I don't think it's going to happen. Just to let you understand, we've talked a lot about the Tuesday deadline for the budget. Theoretically, you could do a Hail Mary, and somebody on the final day of session in the final waiting minutes could add an amendment to a bill to add $25 million or $50 million. And even though it's outside the budget, that would still be legal, and you could do it at the last minute. I just don't think that's going to happen.
So in other words, it's not over. Tell it's over the process. Gary, find out with the Associated Press.
Yeah.
Yeah, theoretically. Stick with us. Lots more to come when it comes to the state budget process, priorities, and politics. Healthcare. It was the issue that held up previous state budgets, but not this year so far, thanks to more than $1 billion promised by the Trump administration. That's next as the Sunshine Economy continues. We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. 2 years ago, Florida lawmakers could not agree to a budget during their usual law writing session. They had to figure out how to deal with $1 billion less coming to Florida from the federal government to pay for the health care of uninsured Floridians. At the time, the Obama administration was winding down federal dollars earmarked for what's called the low-income pool. That's money used to pay safety net hospitals throughout the state for providing health care to people who don't have insurance and can't pay for their care. It was the White House's effort back then to try to get Florida lawmakers to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Now, it didn't work. Instead, Florida Republican lawmakers funneled some state dollars into the program while the total amount continued dropping year after year. And this year, the federal government had been sent to send $0 for the low-income pool beginning in July. But something happened, the election of Donald Trump. Now, that changed the climate and the budget calculation. Instead of cutting the money, the Trump administration has offered to increase the federal contribution to $1.5 billion beginning in July. It's a reversal that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid has been asked to explain to Congress by next week. But if Florida lawmakers can agree to a state budget this week, the money could play a big role in helping close budget holes that were there just a few months ago. Gary Fineout, covering the State House for the Associated Press, is still with us from Tallahassee. Gary, is this money in the Florida budget right now as we speak and expect this process to come to an end?
No.
It is not. So does it then go a ways to close the differences that may still exist?
What is going on at the present time is there is still, quote-unquote, negotiations related to the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm. And, strings attached is what that is. Strings attached.
Yes. Strings attached is a better way to do it. there is also, and this has not been my reporting. This has been the reporting of somebody from Politico, Florida, Christine Sexton.
Yes.
And who I know was supposed to be on the program and wasn't able to
join
us.
Got pulled away because it's a dynamic environment in Tallahassee today.
I understand.
Yeah.
But she had a very excellent story recently that pointed out that the $1.5 billion, yes, was authorized, but the local hospital districts were unsure that they could put in enough money to even pull down the full $1.5. So even if you sort of in other words, what her story pointed out was, yeah, the governor said it was 1.5, and the Trump administration says it's 1.5 billion, but it in actuality may be substantially less because, you know, Medicaid is a matching program, and you have to put up a certain amount of local money to draw down federal money, and the locals were kind of saying we don't think that we can put up the full amount to trigger the full match from the feds. So all that said and done, right now, low-income pool money is not in the mix as we bring the budget in for a landing. Now, they've left open the possibility that we can address this later. I don't know. I mean, there's theoretically a way you could do that is if you put some language somewhere that says that the Legislative Budget Commission, which is a a constitutionally approved panel that is allowed to make mid-year budget adjustments. I mean, you theoretically could grant them the power to spend this money later in the year when we get the terms and conditions worked out. But as for right now, in terms of this budget, it does not reflect the money.
In the meantime, the Senate and the House continue working out details to cut money from overall spending for health care. The proposed budget on the health care portion of the state budget, which is the largest singular piece of that pie, of course, is actually reduced from what the state spent a year ago. Not a lot, $100 million. And when you're talking about $30 billion plus, it's not a lot of money, but it does add up. Is there any specificity in what accounts for the lower spending of health care on the part of the state government?
Well, I think the fact that we don't have the low-income pool money and we're doing cuts to hospitals, because the cuts to hospitals that are included in the budget proposal right now are in excess of $600 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that's basically what's going on.
And are those two related, Gary, the cut to hospital revenue of $600 million and the potential lack of the ability of the local contribution to pull down the $1.5 billion offered up by the federal government for the low-income pool?
I wish I could give you a firm answer on that. I don't. I'm not as involved
calculus.
In the details.
Yeah.
I'm not involved as much in the details on that fine of a point.
Complicated details. But the Senate here is talking about the last-minute motions when it comes to health care. I do want to ask you about Zika, something that has been important, certainly here in South Florida. The governor has talked about increasing some of the money for it. Has that played a role in the healthcare spending debate this springtime?
You know, I believe there was discussion of appropriating some extra money, but it's kind of interesting. Out of sight, out of mind is I really have not heard a lot of conversation about Zika and about doing it and making sure. And now I do know that there has been some last minute discussions as to appropriating some extra money dealing with the opioid crisis. I know that mm-hmm. that has been discussed. So,
and we got one question on Twitter as well about medicinal marijuana related somewhat to healthcare, perhaps not the healthcare budget here. Just real quick, what do you know about the issue around incorporating the voter approved amendment for medical marijuana into state legislation?
Well, I think both the House and Senate are working on trying to get a bill that will be acceptable to both sides. Whether or not that bill will be acceptable to the people who push the amendment, mm-hmm. I still don't know. I mean, obviously, clearly, one of the biggest things is that smoking of medical marijuana in a traditional sense will not be allowed.
Yeah.
That appears to be one thing that they appear to be firm on. And the question has been, the House has relented somewhat on this, because initially the House was saying you couldn't have vaping or edibles or things of that nature as well. And I think they've backed off of that a little bit. And so, I mean, there is anticipation that they will pass some sort of bill by the end of this week.
Gary Fineout with the Associated Press. Stick with us. A little more to come here on the Sunshine Economy on the state budget, spending on K-12 public schools, including charter schools. That's coming up as the Sunshine Economy continues. We're back on the Sunshine Economy. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. State of Florida will be spending more money on public education next year, but how it will spend the money remains an open question, with the state budget due tomorrow in order for lawmakers to avoid a special session. Last week, budget negotiators agreed to a small increase in per-student funding, a $24.49 per-student increase to just over $7,200 per pupil. One item not included in that formula, though, is a $200 million plan for Schools of Hope. It's a plan that aims to attract charter schools to neighborhoods with the worst performing public schools. Gary Fineout with the Associated Press is still with us from Tallahassee. Kristen Clark now joins us. She's with the Miami Herald Tampa Bay Times Tallahassee Bureau, covering education and other issues in the State House. Kristen, what do we know about the Schools of Hope spending this $200 million plan? Where does it stand in the budget process?
Well, they've locked up the dollars behind K-12 at this point, and included in that is a pot of money now. It's about $414 million for Schools of Hope and for the best and brightest teacher bonuses. So they've kind of lumped them together in the same pot of money. But the continued talk is that is what it has been, is that $200 million of that would go to Schools of Hope, $214 million of that would go to the teacher's bonuses. But what exactly that will be still remains to be seen, because the policy bills tied to both of those proposals and a few others have not been resolved, I think, as Gary mentioned earlier in the program.
Yeah. Does the project for Schools of Hope, does it impact funding for traditional public schools?
It's separate from the traditional funding that schools get. This is, above and beyond, the traditional funding. And so that's where Speaker Corcoran and other lawmakers have pushed back on the narrative that it's only a small increase to schools next year, because they say, well, we have all this other money, this hundreds of millions of dollars in other money. However, the $200 million for Schools of Hope, for instance, depending on where that goes, that might just go to charter schools.
Right.
And that might just go to a few traditional schools and new charter schools.
The public school advocates would say that could be $200 million into the traditional K-12 budget.
Exactly. So there's, it depends on how you look at it, where this money is actually going.
And Gary Fineout from the Associated Press, we were talking earlier about this linkage of issues. Is this a particular extreme case of teacher bonuses this charter school project, the Schools of Hope project, being linked, their fate being linked together in the dollars and the budgetary process?
Well, clearly the money was in the budget, so therefore that became a clear part of the budget discussion. And then it's just a question of how the policy is going to be carried out. And per what Kristen just said, it's important to point out, you could have taken this $400 million, which you decided to put in the education silo, you could have taken it and directed it into the main spending formula, which distributes money all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, we're still waiting to see the language on Best and Brightest, the teacher bonus program. But that's a program that has been fraught with a lot of problems and a lot of people who question the sort of wisdom of why a SAT or ACT score of a teacher is relevant to whether or not they deserve a bonus.
Yeah. Do we know if they're going to change any of that? I know we're still waiting to see particulars, but has there been any discussion around the edge of the chambers about changing the pre-qualifications in order to get those teacher bonuses if the money's in the budget? Kristen?
That's the whole part of the expansion, why there's so much extra money in it this year. Because think about it, this year they only had $49 million. So now you're talking $214 million. Mm-hmm. That's, do the math. And so they are expanding it to a broader amount of teachers by looking at, do they have a good GPA? Did they graduate magna or summa cum laude? Or what other academic achievements do they have aside from what single test might measure their own aptitude, if you will? But one thing, important thing to note on this too. Now this will be extended. That's the third year in a row now that this has been, enacted through the budget. There has never been a policy bill that passed both chambers to put this in law. This is totally and completely has been a budget only project.
That's a great point. Kristen Clark, watching the education portion of the budget for our partner, the Miami Herald and Tampa Bay Times in Tallahassee. Gary Fineout, thank you so much for spending the entire hour with us. Gary covers the State House for the Associated Press. Great to have you on for the program, Gary. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Pilar Uribe is our technical director today. Bridget O'Brien helped with our guest booking. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening to the Sunshine Economy.